Chapter 114. What befell Mr. Pickwick when he got into the Fleet, what prisoners he saw there, and how he passed the night, Mr. Tom Roker, the gentleman who had accompanied Mr. Pickwick into the prison, turned sharp round to the right when he got to the bottom of the little flight of steps, and led the way, through an iron gate which stood open, and up another short flight of steps, into a long narrow gallery, dirty and low, paved with stone, and very dimly lighted by a window at each remote end. This, apostrophe said the gentleman, thrusting his hands into his pockets, and looking carelessly over his shoulder to Mr. Pickwick, this here is the hall flight. Apostrophe, oh, apostrophe, replied Mr. Pickwick, looking down a dark and filthy staircase, which appeared to lead to a range of damp and gloomy stone vaults, beneath the ground, and those, I suppose, are the little cellars, where the prisoners keep their small quantities of coals. Unpleasant places to have to go down to, but very convenient, I dare say. Apostrophe, yes, I shouldn't wonder if they was convenient, apostrophe, replied the gentleman, seeing that a few people live there, pretty snug. That's the fare, that is. Apostrophe, my friend, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick, you don't really mean to say that human beings live down in those wretched dungeons? Apostrophe, apostrophe, don't I? Apostrophe, apostrophe, replied Mr. Roker, with indignant astonishment. Why shouldn't I? Apostrophe, apostrophe, live. Live down there. Apostrophe, exclaimed Mr. Pickwick. Live down there. Yes, and die down there too, very often. Apostrophe, replied Mr. Roker, and what of that? Who's got to say anything agin it? Live down there. Yes, and a worry good place it is to live in, ain't it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, as Roker turned somewhat fiercely upon Mr. Pickwick in saying this, and moreover muttered in an excited fashion certain unpleasant invocations concerning his own eyes, limbs, and circulating fluids, the latter gentleman deemed it advisable to pursue the discourse no further. Mr. Roker then proceeded to mount another staircase, as dirty as that which led to the place which has just been the subject of discussion, in which ascent he was closely followed by Mr. Pickwick and Sam. There, apostrophe, said Mr. Roker, pausing for breath when they reached another gallery of the same dimensions as the one below, this is the coffee room flight, the one above's the third, and the one above that's the top, and the room where you're a-going to sleep tonight is the warden's room, and it's this way, come on. Apostrophe, having said all this in a breath, Mr. Roker mounted another flight of stairs with Mr. Pickwick and Sam Weller following at his heels. These staircases received light from sundry windows placed at some little distance above the floor, and looking into a graveled area bounded by a high brick wall, with iron chevaux de frise at the top. This area, it appeared from Mr. Roker's statement, was the racket ground, and it further appeared, on the testimony of the same gentleman, that there was a smaller area in that portion of the prison which was nearest Farringdon Street, denominated and called the Painted Ground, apostrophe, from the fact of its walls having once displayed the semblance of various men of war in full sail, and other artistical effects achieved in bygone times by some imprisoned draftsman in his leisure hours. Having communicated this piece of information, apparently more for the purpose of discharging his bosom of an important fact than with any specific view of enlightening Mr. Pickwick, the guide, having at length reached another gallery, led the way into a small passage at the extreme end, opened a door, and disclosed an apartment of an appearance by no means inviting, containing 8 or 9 iron bedsteads. There, apostrophe, said Mr. Roker, holding the door open, and looking triumphantly round at Mr. Pickwick, there's a room. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick's face, however, betokened such a very trifling portion of satisfaction at the appearance of his lodging, that Mr. Roker looked, for a reciprocity of feeling, into the countenance of Samuel Weller, who, until now, had observed a dignified silence. There's a room, young man, apostrophe, observed Mr. Roker. I see it, apostrophe replied Sam, with a placid nod of the head. You wouldn't think to find such a room as this in the Farringdon Hotel, would you? Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Roker, with a complacent smile. To this Mr. Weller replied with an easy and unstudied closing of one eye, which might be considered to mean, either that he would have thought it, or that he would not have thought it, or that he had never thought anything at all about it, as the observer's imagination suggested. Having executed this feat, and reopened his eye, Mr. Weller proceeded to inquire which was the individual bedstead that Mr. Roker had so flatteringly described as an out-and-outer to sleep in. That's it, apostrophe replied Mr. Roker, pointing to a very rusty one in the corner. It would make anyone go to sleep, that bedstead would, whether they wanted to or not. Apostrophe, I should think, apostrophe said Sam, eyeing the piece of furniture in question with a look of excessive disgust. I should think Poppy's was nothing to it. Apostrophe, nothing at all, apostrophe said Mr. Roker. And I suppose, apostrophe said Sam, with a sidelong glance at his master, as if to see whether there were any symptoms of his determination, being shaken by what passed, I suppose the other gentlemen as sleeps here are gentlemen. Apostrophe, nothing but it, apostrophe said Mr. Roker. One of 'em takes his 12 pints of ale a day, and never leaves off smoking even at his meals. Apostrophe, he must be a first-rater, apostrophe said Sam. A1 replied Mr. Roker. Nothing daunted, even by this intelligence, Mr. Pickwick smilingly announced his determination to test the powers of the narcotic bedstead for that night, and Mr. Roker, after informing him that he could retire to rest at whatever hour he thought proper, without any further notice or formality, walked off, leaving him standing with Sam in the gallery. It was getting dark. That is to say, a few gas jets were kindled in this place which was never light, by way of compliment to the evening, which had set in outside. As it was rather warm, some of the tenants of the numerous little rooms which opened into the gallery on either hand, had set their doors ajar. Mr. Pickwick peeped into them as he passed along, with great curiosity and interest. Here, four or five great hulking fellows, just visible through a cloud of tobacco smoke, were engaged in noisy and riotous conversation over half-emptied pots of beer, or playing at all fours with a very greasy pack of cards. In the adjoining room, some solitary tenant might be seen poring, by the light of a feeble tallow candle, over a bundle of soiled and tattered papers, yellow with dust and dropping to pieces from age, writing, for the 100th time, some lengthened statement of his grievances, for the perusal of some great man whose eyes it would never reach, or whose heart it would never touch. In a third, a man, with his wife and a whole crowd of children, might be seen making up a scanty bed on the ground, or upon a few chairs, for the younger ones, to pass the night in. And in a fourth, and a fifth, and a sixth, and a seventh, the noise, and the beer, and the tobacco smoke, and the cards, all came over again in greater force than before. In the galleries themselves, and more especially on the staircases, there lingered a great number of people, who came there, some because their rooms were empty and lonesome, others because their rooms were full and hot, the greater part, because they were restless and uncomfortable, and not possessed of the secret of exactly knowing what to do with themselves. There were many classes of people here, from the laboring man in his fustian jacket, to the broken-down spendthrift in his shawl dressing gown, most appropriately out at elbows. But there was the same air about them all, a kind of listless, jailbird, careless swagger, a vagabondish who's afraid sort of bearing, which is wholly indescribable in words, but which any man can understand in one moment if he wish, by setting foot in the nearest debtor's prison, and looking at the very first group of people he sees there, with the same interest as Mr. Pickwick did. It strikes me, Sam, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, leaning over the iron rail at the stairhead. It strikes me, Sam, that imprisonment for debt is scarcely any punishment at all. Apostrophe, think not, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe inquired Mr. Weller. You see how these fellows drink, and smoke, and roar, apostrophe replied Mr. Pickwick. It's quite impossible that they can mind it much. Apostrophe, ah, that's just the worry thing, sir, apostrophe rejoined Sam, they don't mind it. It's a reglar holiday to the mall porter and Skittles. It's the toter ones as gets done over with this sort o' thing. Them downhearted fellers as can't swig away at the beer, nor play at Skittles neither. Them as won't pay if they could, and gets low by being boxed up. I'll tell you what it is, sir. Them as is always idling in public houses it don't damage at all, and them as is always a working when they can, it damages too much. It's an equal, as my father used to say when his grog weren't made half and half. It's an equal, and that's the fault on it. Apostrophe, I think you're right, Sam, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, after a few moments' reflection, quite right. Apostrophe, perhaps, now and then, there's some honest people as likes it, apostrophe observed Mr. Weller, in a ruminative tone, but I never hear no one as I can call to mind, except the little dirty-faced man in the brown coat, and that was force of habit. Apostrophe, and who was he? Apostrophe inquired Mr. Pickwick. Why, that's just the worry point as nobody never knowed, apostrophe replied Sam. But what did he do? Apostrophe, why, he did what many men as has been much better knowed as done in their time, sir, apostrophe replied Sam, he run a match agin the constable, and won it. Apostrophe, in other words, I suppose, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, he got into debt. Apostrophe, just that, sir, apostrophe replied Sam, and in course o' time he come here in consequence. It warn't much execution for £9 nothing, multiplied by 5 for costs, but howsoever here he stopped for 17 year. If he got any wrinkles in his face, they were stopped up with the dirt, for both the dirty face and the brown coat was just the same at the end o' that time as they was at the beginning. He was a worry peaceful, enoughened little creature, and was always a bustling about for somebody, or playing rackets and never winning, till at last the turnkeys they got quite fond on him, and he was in the lodge every night, a chattering with them, and telling stories, and all that ear. One night he was in there as usual, along with a worry old friend of his, as was on the lock, when he says all of a sudden, I ain't seen the market outside. Bill, he says, Fleet Market was there at that time, I ain't seen the market outside, Bill, he says, for 17 year. I know you ain't, says the turnkey, smoking his pipe. I should like to see it for a minute, Bill, he says. Worry probable, says the turnkey, smoking his pipe worry fierce, and making believe he warmed up to what the little man wanted. Bill, says the little man, more abrupt than afore, I've got the fancy in my head. Let me see the public streets once more afore I die, and if I ain't struck with apoplexy, I'll be back in 5 minutes by the clock. And what 'ud become o' me if you was struck with apoplexy? Said the turnkey. Why, says the little creeter, whoever found me, 'ud bring me home, for I've got my card in my pocket, Bill, he says, number 20 coffee room flight colon and that was true, sure enough, for when he wanted to make the acquaintance of any newcomer, he used to pull out a little limp card with them words on it and nothing else, in consideration of which, he was always called number 20. The turnkey takes a fixed look at him, and at last he says in a solemn manner, 20, he says, I'll trust you, you won't get your old friend into trouble. No, my boy, I hope I've something better behind here, says the little man, and as he said it, he hit his little waistcoat worry hard, and then a tear started out o' each eye, which was worry extraordinary, for it was supposed as water never touched his face. He shook the turnkey by the hand. Out he went apostrophe and never came back again, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. Wrong for once, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Weller, for back he come, 2 minutes afore the time, a bilin' with rage, saying how he'd been nearly run over by a hackney coach, that he warn't used to it, and he was blowed if he wouldn't write to the Lord Mayor. They got him pacified at last, and for 5 years after that, he never even so much as peeped out o' the lodge gate. Apostrophe, at the expiration of that time he died, I suppose, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. No, he didn't, sir, apostrophe replied Sam. He got a curiosity to go and taste the beer at a new public house over the way, and it was such a worry nice parlor that he took it into his head to go there every night, which he did for a long time, always coming back reglar about a quarter of an hour afore the gate shut, which was all worry snug and comfortable. At last he began to get so precious jolly that he used to forget how the time went, or care nothing at all about it, and he went on getting later and later, till one night his old friend was just a-shutting the gate and turned the key in fact when he come up. Hold hard, Bill, he says. What, ain't you come home yet, 20? Apostrophe apostrophe says the turnkey, I thought you was in, long ago. No, I wasn't, says the little man, with a smile. Well then, I'll tell you what it is, my friend, says the turnkey, opening the gate worry slow and sulky. It's my opinion as you've got into bad company o' late, which I'm worry sorry to see. Now, I don't wish to do nothing harsh, he says, but if you can't confine yourself to steady circles, and find your way back at reglar hours, as sure as you're a-standing there, I'll shut you out altogether. The little man was seized with a violent fit o' trembling, and never went outside the prison walls arterwards. Apostrophe apostrophe, as Sam concluded, Mr. Pickwick slowly retraced his steps downstairs. After a few thoughtful turns in the painted ground, which, as it was now dark, was nearly deserted, he intimated to Mr. Weller that he thought it high time for him to withdraw for the night, requesting him to seek a bed in some adjacent public house, and return early in the morning, to make arrangements for the removal of his master's wardrobe from the George and Vulture. This request Mr. Samuel Weller prepared to obey, with as good a grace as he could assume, but with a very considerable show of reluctance nevertheless. He even went so far as to essay sundry ineffectual hints regarding the expediency of stretching himself on the gravel for that night, but finding Mr. Pickwick obstinately deaf to any such suggestions, finally withdrew. There is no disguising the fact that Mr. Pickwick felt very low-spirited and uncomfortable, not for lack of society, for the prison was very full, and a bottle of wine would at once have purchased the utmost good fellowship of a few choice spirits, without any more formal ceremony of introduction. But he was alone in the coarse vulgar crowd, and felt the depression of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.